afternoon, everyone. I thought that would be a nice way to start the show with a traditional Christmas song. My name is Kathy Connor, and you're listening to Kathy's Corner on WPKN 89.5 FM and streaming online at WPKN.org. The shows are also podcast on SoundCloud, WPKN Community Radio. And I want to say this is my first show with the new transmitter. And I want to congratulate Steve and all the wonderful staff and volunteers and listeners who made that happen. As you know, if you've heard the show before, you know that my show is part of a series that airs on this station during the week from 12 noon to 1 p.m., and experts like to share their knowledge. That's what experts do. And sometimes open the conversation for your participation. I don't always do that, but maybe we'll do that in the next show. I have an interesting show planned for January. So my show airs the third Wednesday of the month. That's where we are now. My expertise is in the field of consciousness. Consciousness is your essence. It's your awareness. It's intelligence. Waking, dreaming, sleeping, these are states of consciousness. They're physiologically different from each other, subjectively as well as objectively. That means they're experienced differently. That's the subjective. They can be measured differently. That's the objective. Their brainwave patterns, blood chemistry is different, respiration's different. This is all taking place throughout the day, throughout the whole 24-hour day. It's always my joy and pleasure to share with you over 40 years of learning and experience. We're coming upon 45 years, so I like to keep it on the downside because I don't have to remember how old I am, in the field of consciousness and the knowledge how to unfold more of its value from deep within the mind. My profession, what I do when I'm not on the show the other Wednesdays, I'm the director of the Transcendental Meditation Program in Fairfield County, Connecticut. TM, for short, is a specific form of meditation that regularly and systematically provides the experience of the inner value of life, direct contact with the finer fields of the mind, in order to unfold those qualities of a higher, more refined state of consciousness. Not so different from cleaning the dust off the furniture, clearing the fog, those clouds from the sun, or the fog off the mirror. You have to get rid of the stuff that's blocking what really is the essence. So we're talking about the essence. So again, if you've heard the show before, you know that I always take this understanding of the deeper value of life and attribute it to a theme, something going on in our world, something in the outer world. If you're finding us, though, for the first time, then welcome. In every show, I also like to mention there are two values to life, two modes, how life moves. There's rest, activity. It's how you breathe. It's how we walk, rest, activity. There are two aspects of life, inner, outer. And again, relating these mechanics to something in particular or seasonal or topical, the outer active world is what we know pretty much, really well, actually. It's the inner in consciousness at its deeper values, where we find the deepest peace and the inner peace. That's what inner peace is. So we want to know more about that. And this is the season of peace and goodwill to all. We would all like to thrive in that state of peace, wouldn't we? It's actually a very real and possible experience, as each of my shows emphasize. And even on a larger scale, we can enjoy peace. And I've done shows on how peace is generated in the collective consciousness. That's our wish, in this season of peace particularly, but any time, to enjoy the benefits of a society where wrong action is less and eventually eliminated when consciousness is more refined. We're seeing this transformation, actually, in the news. Wrong action has occurred, even after decades of being tolerated and hidden. The truth unfolds, and we have a chance to look at that. We have a chance to make the adjustments that we need to in how we behave with each other. There's a saying in Sanskrit, Satyameva Jayate, and it translates to truth alone triumphs. The truth comes out. It always comes out. even if it takes a long time, it's going to come out. I always say this to kids, my grandkids. I remind them that there's no value in not speaking the truth, because at some point, not just because it's the right thing to do, but it will come out. And now truth is coming out. Right action is rising, even if for some, it means taking a hard look or a forced look in the mirror. At least the truth is coming out. Satyame Vijayate. And this is also the season to celebrate our holidays, of course. Hanukkah just ended. Christmas is around the corner. For celebrations, both celebrations, there's gift giving and sharing of love and good times with family and friends. Both are holidays, or holy days, we could say. Holiday is experiencing at a finer level of feeling and thinking for a finer level of doing. So to accomplish something, you don't have to work that hard. Doing everything in a most relaxed manner. Why should we stress out? Why do we? And doing everything in the most relaxed manner means doing by thought. Doing by doing is one thing. That takes more energy, and that's what most of us are doing. But doing by thought, that's a finer level of doing. And that's the value of a holiday. We come out completely refreshed, and so much so that whatever is required will be supplied to us even without a lot of thinking. Isn't it nice that you have an idea, you want to accomplish something, and you wake up and open your eyes and it's happening for you? Things moving more efficiently. I don't actually celebrate Hanukkah, but I have a simple understanding of it as I look to the origin of the celebration and appreciate its meaning. Hanukkah is also known as the Festival of Lights. It's an 8-day celebration that commemorates the rededication of the Second Temple in Jerusalem in the 2nd century BC during the Maccabean revolt against Greek rulers at the time. They were oppressive. It's actually a story of triumph and miracles. It's strength and determination of the human spirit and a quest for freedom, something we pretty much do every day, but this was on a big scale. Religious practice was forbidden at the time, and a small group of Jews, the Maccabees, revolted, and they succeeded against a much larger force. So a small, determined group defeated a mighty army. And it was with their success that the first thing they wanted to do was restore the Holy Temple that had been desecrated. They wanted to revive their traditions, their culture. So the menorah that was in the temple needed to be relit because, according to tradition, it's supposed to burn continuously. But there was only one vial of oil, which was really enough for one day of light. But miraculously, the oil lasted for 8 days. So today, everyone is probably aware that each day of the 8 days, there's another candle lit and another candle lit. So it starts out as one, then it's two, then it's three. So that's the light increasing and becoming brighter so that it can dispel the darkness. Hanukkah is a celebration of triumph of light over darkness, purity over desecration, and strength of determination over strength in numbers. So it's the spiritual over the material. So Christmas is also about light. And there are other traditions that celebrate light, like the Hindus have a celebration called Deepavali, and that's also called Festival of Lights. It's about light. At Christmas time, everywhere we go, there are the Christmas lights, and they're really pretty, and some people really go all out. And I remember driving around to see the lights as a family when I was a child, and once in a while, if I have a little extra time, I'd like to do that now. It's so refreshing and pretty to see. And we drive by a particular home and see all the lights, and everybody goes, "Ooh, that's so pretty." It does something to you. The lights symbolize the light of Christ. His birth brings a new light of knowledge, a revised understanding of life. Christ came to earth to revitalize and remind us of the values of peace, love, harmony, joy. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. Christmas is celebrated with lights, with songs of praise, gifts of goodwill, and it's also celebrated with Santa, elves, snowmen, all kinds of fun winter images. But we can enjoy both things. Here's that two again. We can enjoy both. The spiritual is there. The material is there. They can both coexist. There's a show on TV this time of year, and I've only glanced at it this year. I've seen it in other years as well. And it's the Great Light Fight or something like that on HGTV. It's a contest. Who has the biggest display of lights? And it's unbelievable to see what people do to put these lights up. I am so impressed. So much work goes into these displays. And the light can be in the tens of thousands of bulbs. And it seems to get more and more advanced each year. I think this year it even got bigger because they were including multiple homes. So it's mesmerizing to see those things. But at the same time, I just want to make sure everybody doesn't forget the meaning of the lights. Why are the lights there? So I found myself thinking, well, it's not really about how big we get that light. It's about how pure is that light and what it represents. And my favorite Christmas image, there's a street near where I live. And every year on Christmas Eve, the entire street, and it's a long street. It's not a short little cul-de-sac. It's a very long street. Everybody puts out those luminaries, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's so transforming. It's a beautiful, beautiful sight. The entire street is aglow with these little lights lining the street. It's simple, yet it's breathtaking. It's not fancy. There's no pulsating Christmas music, but it's really beautiful and silent. And for me, that's how I feel the spirit of Christmas. Christmas and Hanukkah are celebrations to be reminded of God. It's a time to experience and express love for God, for family, for friends. And we're giving. We're giving from our heart to another heart. And it's really fun. I love giving gifts at Christmas. I wish I had an unlimited budget because I love the facial expressions on loved ones when they open the gift that we spent lots of time thinking about, oh, what would be the right thing, and lots of time hunting it down. Or maybe it wasn't so much lots of time anymore because we can go to our computers and do our shopping now. But you still have to wait for the package to come. And you put a lot of effort and thought into what you want to get. It brings an upsurge of happiness to both hearts, the one that's giving and the one that's receiving. No matter what tradition or religion we celebrate, we're all united in our focus to enjoy the light of life. Everybody likes feeling good, and we all want to move in the direction of greatest love. There's unity in that, even though there's a lot of diversity, but there's unity in that. At the basis, we're united in our quest. On the surface, it might look very different, but it's the surface value that has created all the complexities. We can get caught in that and say, oh, you're this or you're that. But if we realize that we are all connected, we'll be less likely to be judgmental. So how are we going to achieve that status? We're not going to be judgmental. It's not a frame of mind. It's not a contrived experience. It's a status that's falsely... Or it's not a status that you can generate yourself and say, oh, I'm good, but you're really not. Living life in freedom and harmony, it's a matter of having a physiology that's established in freedom and harmony. Let's take the brain, for example. I like to always bring up the brain. One of these days, we're going to get a brain expert on here. We really don't have a technology in our educational and social systems to develop full brain potential. We're learning things, yeah. It's fact-based primarily, although there are other ways to expand the brain other than with facts. But if it's just on the surface, the brain remains fragmented if it's less nourished particularly. And a fragmented brain results in a fragmented view of life with narrow, selfish, and short-sighted behaviors. And that's what we've seen, these narrow, selfish, disrespectful, short-sighted behaviors. It's not everybody, but it certainly is a possibility. If the brain is functioning like that, it's not an excuse either. We can change those behaviors, but changing them on the surface, telling someone, oh, you're bad, you shouldn't be doing that. If they don't see that it's wrong, they're likely to do it again. So what you want to do is change how they experience the world by changing the brain. Everything affects the brain, so do something good for it. A more holistic functioning A nourished brain results in a holistic, harmonious, functioning individual. We have a mind, we have a body, we have a brain. This is our machinery of experience. If you've heard my show before, you know I talk about that a lot because most meditations don't. And if you don't take care of the car, it's not going to drive all that great. And I'm talking about fine values of the functioning nervous system. It's all part of it. So if there is a car, let's say we're driving it, it's struggling to get down the street. First thought is, oh, I got to take this in. I got to see what's wrong. I have to fix that because it's slowing me down. I can't get where I'm going. It's not safe. We want to fix it. Maybe we can do it ourselves, but often we'll want to take it to an expert. Our machinery of experience sometimes shows that kind of wear and tear. Physically, sure, joints get sore with age. I don't have the energy or so-and-so, aches and pains. So we seek an expert's help or advice in order to adjust that so it can function better. Mentally and emotionally, it's the same thing. If we get easily upset or we're too anxious or angry, all of those things indicate something's out of order, out of balance. We don't want to be that way. We don't want to feel these negative emotions. In addition to attending to the imbalance on the surface, we can attend to it at its depth as well. So experts no longer say, well, things like meditation are an alternative approach to best life, but a complementary approach to best life. So you take what you have to take. You follow your doctor's advice. Excuse me. You do what you have to do to address the symptoms, but at the same time, it's advised by many physicians now, shore up the foundation of our physiology from the inside out. The inner supports the outer like the foundation of a building. It may not be seen, but it's essential to the building. The screen of the movie may not be seen as you're watching it, particularly these fast action movies like the new Jedi one, the Star Wars one, The Last Jedi. But without the screen, well, can't enjoy that. This is a real and tangible inner experience. We know it. We've experienced it. Everyone's had some intuitive experience, some creative experience, some deeper peace. But it often gets overshadowed by the outer life, so much so. And also, there's a habit of the mind going outward, primarily the way it was trained. So we don't really tend to the inner. The roots of a tree may not be seen, but without nourishing them, the tree becomes weak. So if our behaviors are weak, then something's not working at a deeper level too. The inner life may not be as noticeable, but without attending to it, life can get more complicated and lacking in harmony. Maximum harmony, peace, orderliness, it's all found at the deepest levels of the mind. And that's what inner peace is. And it's called inner peace for a reason. It's not called, oh, I'm going to get me some outer peace. Well, that's what we do all the time. Outer enjoyment, outer something. But let's get some inner peace because that's supportive of the outer. The mind can move inward. Inherent in the ability to be active is the ability to settle down. You can run, but you can also stop. And the Christmas season is a good example. We're running here and there. I found myself being super busy the last few days, just wrapping up some stuff, literally. Oh, I've got this. Oh, I've got that. I got to run over here, run over there. So we can be running here and there, but we also sit down and enjoy the spirit of the season. Inherent in the ability to be active is actually the ability to be still. There is a silent value of the mind. You can't try to have that. There's a verb there. But there is that experience does exist. There is a silent, settled level of the mind. It's wakeful, it's aware, it's blissful, and it's peaceful. It's called the simplest state of awareness. A field of silence and peacefulness. Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. There's that light again. The important point here is that we can have both things. The inner and the outer are both there for full life, all the time. It doesn't go off like a light switch. It's not just a seasonal experience. Oh, I'm going to be peaceful now because it's Christmas time. you know, the song, Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He's watching. My granddaughter said, seems a little weird that he's watching me. I said, oh, yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, we pretty much don't need that. But since we're speaking of Christmas, there's the inner and the outer with Christmas itself. Christmas is a lot of fun. Sometimes it can be a bit of a pressure cooker, depending on how long that line is. But there's the exchange of the gifts and the good food and the parties, the celebrations, the decorations. And this time of year, there's all the Christmas specials and all the tips for shopping that started weeks ago. But then, of course, there's the inner aspect of Christmas, that part of the holiday that encourages us to do good to others. We see the Salvation Army people outside of all the stores, and we remember, oh, right, there are people less fortunate. What can I do for them? So the goodwill towards men, we have a chance to remember the spirit or spiritual part of Christmas. So there's both. No one has to do one at the expense of the other. So we can be balanced, giving, receiving gifts and all the gatherings on the one hand, and at the same time, living the principles of Christmas and expressing those in our behaviors in a genuine and natural way. It cannot be contrived. I mention that a lot because, you know, we try to do good, but we may not be thinking good. And that's also an influence that can be generated. So we just want to be alert that this is what I'm talking about. Is not trying to achieve an end result, is experiencing something that produces that end result. Okay, so the qualities of Christmas, we're able to express the higher values of life naturally. That's a result of living the inner value of life in the outer, bringing it out. You don't just stay there. You come out of meditation. I had shopping to do. I had things to do. Bringing the qualities of an expanded consciousness into life. That's the point of meditation anyway. It's gotten turned around. People think that meditation's their goal. I should get somewhere while I'm meditating. In fact, it's the process towards a much bigger goal of having the qualities of the inner as you're moving through life all the time. Don't we want a fulfilled life, not just a story to tell? Oh, I had a good meditation. not that impressive if it's only a few minutes. So religions teach us right action. That's important. But over time, they've lost a knowledge of how to develop it in the physiology so that it's maintained, so that we can reflect those qualities of a refined consciousness, so that right action is a natural result of a clear consciousness without strain. The knowledge and formula have all been there. It's in all the religions. It's been there all along, but unfortunately, the techniques themselves were lost to the masses over time as they were misunderstood or misinterpreted and also rendered ineffective, because if it's not done right, it just doesn't work. With the loss of the methodology to go within, what was left was a glimpse of the experience, which then became a strain or effort to force it to appear, and that's not going to help. Most likely, these experiences would be temporary, leaving one wanting more, a reason many people that I've met, anyway, leave their religions that they grew up in, has a lot to do with unfulfilled spiritual experience. The purpose of religion, what is it? The purpose of religion is to set the life of the individual in tune with the laws of nature and set it so that it naturally flows in the stream of evolution. Religion serves this practical purpose. No matter what our religious affiliations are, we can follow the precepts of our religions much better when we are better ourselves. Okay, I think what I'm saying here is we can't be hypocritical. You can't stand there and say, oh, I'm a religious person, then turn around and do something that's not good or harmful to others. You have to live, walk the talk, is how they say. But if you can't even contrive that, it has to be genuine. We learn the basic principles in all our cultures, but how does someone do good when they don't feel good or can't see the wrong they're doing? If someone has a sprained ankle, We don't say to them, okay, well, too bad. You have to run the marathon anyway. It's going to make the condition worse, but that's what you got to do. Actually, we don't do that. We say, no, you got to sit this out so it can heal, so that you can progress. We didn't learn that going inward before coming out into life is valuable. Going inward in meditation is a natural part of our successful outer life. And it's mainstream now, really, more so than it ever was. Again, I have 45 years of a viewpoint on it. So I remember the days when hardly anybody understood what I was doing. And now everybody seems to be doing something. We find TM in the boardroom. Lots of corporations offer it to their employees. It's in the schools. It's in the classrooms. It's in the military. And families, they're all practicing something. TM particularly, something together. At some point in the history of meditation, it became common for meditation to be the goal. The experience of meditation became the goal. And I still hear that. Often people expect that meditation should produce a specific experience of their choosing, okay? So they should feel deep. They should feel that peaceful, silent state. And when it doesn't happen, they say it's not working and they give it a bad rap. So I remind people, meditation is a process. The mind's not an elevator that you get in and sink down and stay there. The mind's more like a boat on the water because it needs to help the body purify so that it can maintain this experience. It's because the technique was lost, effort was generated, creating a false temporary effect, that the kind of the results of that were disappointing. So people thought, well, that's not working. But in fact, meditation's a process toward a greater goal. The mind can settle naturally. But because we also have a body, can't forget that. It's good to have that. There needs to be an adjustment to the physiology in order to maintain the experience of peace and harmony. Otherwise, it's temporary. One that's only available during the meditation or a hit or miss in our life. The big picture is missed for a small portion of what the mind-body is capable of experiencing. If the knowledge had not been accurate, and as a result the experience has been lost, then the purpose of meditation has also been lost, and it has become a neat thing to do. You know, I hear this a lot. Oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing Headspace. All these things are great, but don't do them because it's the thing to do. Relaxation is a side effect of meditation. It's not the purpose of it. Using the fuller potential of the mind to experience greater values of consciousness is the purpose of meditation. To directly experience unity within the diversity is the reality of fullness of life, and that's the purpose of meditation. Meditation enhances long-term evolution, not short-term stories to tell, or short-term in the moment effects that don't last very long, don't really change the brain in a significant way. Everything affects the brain, but to change it in a significant way means it starts to function that way, even in challenging activity. Meditation became distorted for centuries when the emphasis was placed on anticipating an experience in meditation rather than experience the systematic unfolding of consciousness, which results in a fuller experience in daily life. That takes longer. Okay. It's like, all right, I got a few basketballs in the hoop. I think I'm going to go out and sign up for the NBA. No, you have to just keep practicing. It's probably good if you keep practicing. Analysis replaced direct experience of the depth of the mind. So it was not experienced with enough consistency to do anything tangible in the outer life. So therefore, what's left is a good story. It was thought that to gain a higher quality of the mind was a rare thing, a rare occurrence, and required some kind of detachment, leaving the active world behind. So that's the image we had, you know, from the media for a long time, that if you were going to have a significant experience, you had to give everything up. Well, how unfortunate is that for the billions of people who are raising families and have responsibilities in the world? This kind of inward life with no material things is a valid life. for the very few of the world who are drawn to it, very few. But for the rest of us, the billions of us, personally, I don't necessarily want to miss the next segment of my favorite show. We have the same hardware and software, a mind, a body, consciousness, a human nervous system. The difference, since we all have one of those, is in its refined values of the mind, body, and anyone can have that. It's a matter of going in a different direction. The state of reality, as described by the enlightened, cannot become the path for the seeker any more than the description of a destination can replace the road that leads to it. So say the wise. So said me just now. And I'm going to say that again. The state of reality, as described by the enlightened, cannot become the path. That means if the enlightened is talking about that peaceful mind, you cannot create the peaceful mind. It cannot become the path for the seeker any more than the description of a destination can replace the road that leads to it. Someone can describe New York and you can tell them you're in New York, but you're really in Bridgeport. Okay, there's a reality check here. In other words, you have to do something for this experience to unfold and not expect it because you want it. If you put the cart before the horse, you don't get too far and you'll struggle to gain even the smallest distance. If you strain or imagine or hope or intention to produce a particular experience in meditation, like removing thoughts in order to have a silent mind, good luck with that. You may have some gain. There can be some result, but overall, there's also added strain because it's not natural. How much more will you have if the mind naturally goes inward and experiences directly the refined, peaceful states within, becomes familiar with them, that's the point, and maintains them in the outer life because the mind is familiar with them. So it's not once in a while. It's not when you don't feel good or you do feel good. It's a regular practice. With TM particularly, it's 20 minutes twice a day. It nourishes the physiology from the point of view of the development of consciousness. So I've said many times, you may have heard if you're a regular listener, in addition to the mind not being an elevator, it's also not a video game. So you don't sit at the controls and tell the mind what to do in this practice, maybe in other practices you do. This may happen in the moment. This happens all the time in the active mind or conscious thinking mind that you're at the controls. But to maintain the more refined values of consciousness, the physiology needs to naturally reflect it. And by the way, when this is happening, our behaviors reflect a higher value for a natural result in respectful actions towards everybody. Regular meditation is necessary to reach that kind of goal. It's like building muscle over time. If you want to be the world champion weightlifter, you don't show up at the gym one time. That's not going to get you to the world stage. But it's consistency, unfolding, developing, needed to achieve an overall goal. And when talking about the subtler regions of the mind, different rules apply, different standards apply. It's not the same as the conscious mind. The mind functions primarily in the outer life. That's its culture. That's how it's been formed, primarily, not exclusively. It's primarily been cultured by societies and educational systems to function in the boundaries of the material or outer life. And it's important. We have to learn about the world. You don't want to just run out there and say, here I am, and don't know that you're supposed to stop at the red light. That's not helpful to anybody. So you learn those things, but if that's all we know, then something's missing. The quieter levels of the mind are less tangible. They're less bound. We're unfamiliar with this less bound or unbounded level of the mind. So how can we have expectations of what it's going to be like? We can't impose the conscious mind expectations on this field of the mind that's not familiar, not yet, over time, becomes very familiar. Expectation and intention will keep the mind in the familiar, in the conscious thinking area of the mind. This is the mind that has been cultured. This is a good part of the mind. Everybody has a thinking mind. You don't want to stop that. And it's been cultured to function in all the boundaries. But sometimes those boundaries get rigid, narrow, and tight. To go within may not be what you might think it is, so don't bring in expectations. But most meditation practices do have some expectations. And there's your cosmic catch 22. No expectations or anticipations in order to transcend and go to those deeper levels. And then, with the right start, the mind will know what to do. That's the basis of TM. It's based on the nature of the mind. That's the start. You have to learn that from a teacher. With the TM technique, there's the use of a mantra. A mantra is not something to consistently repeat. So not only would one need to learn a correct mantra, but also how to use it properly. The nature of the mind is the basis of how the TM technique works. And that nature is to move. So you don't stop it. And it moves towards something of a more progressive value, a more attractive value. The mind moves towards a field of greater success and greatest happiness, bliss. It's happening all the time. We're not always aware of it. But if we're going to change lanes because we're driving by in the slow dump truck, because we're late for an appointment, that's making a decision to move away from the obstacles. If we want a more comfortable and efficient ride. Channel surfing, that's what we do that sometimes. We're going to find a show that gives us the most enjoyment, the most entertainment, or the most information. We don't consciously stop at the show that we don't like, as long as we're in charge of the remote anyway. This movement of life towards a field of great happiness, that's the nature of life. The mind's not jumping around like a monkey. It sometimes feels that way, but it's actually purposeful. It's looking for something to settle on. It's looking for peace. And stress can contribute to this overly active mind. It certainly does. But the nature of the mind is to move towards a field of greater peace. Now, we want it to move inward because that's inner peace. And it will, if you give it the right direction, that's the value of a mantra and using it properly. Like many things with meditation, the term mantra is not properly understood. It's been taken lightly and way out of context. The mantra you can think of as a vehicle that moves the mind from an active to a less active, more harmonious, more peaceful level. It's actually simple yet very exact. It's precise, profound. One needs to learn it from a certified TM instructor. If you think you can save steps and do it on your own without the proper instruction, well, you can also find a book to tell you how to do your own root canal. But would you? Is that really a good idea? The process of TM is very orderly, very precise, and simple. It comes from a tradition of knowledge of natural law. For over 300 years, there's been a systematic exploration of how the laws of nature function. We talk about this sometimes on the show. Science discovered that the universe is orderly and that laws govern it. Especially in this last century or so, modern science has revealed that there's a hierarchical structure of these laws. There's the surface diversity, but there's also a fundamental unity. We know now that nature functions at smaller time and distance scales. For example, there's the atomic level, the nuclear level, the subnuclear level, and then there are energy fields dissolving in what quantum theory calls a unified field. The subtle levels, layers, they're significant, they're powerful. Just in our own time, I have seen, maybe you're younger than me, but I've seen life go from lots of wires and then cables and now wireless. Interestingly, the unified field, as described by science, is understood to have the same qualities as the deepest level of the mind in a state of pure consciousness. And there's plenty of evidence in this scientific age that the experience of transcendental consciousness is definable. It's a phenomenon that can be defined and experienced directly. But again, it's with the repeated experience that it grows and unfolds and shows up in your daily life. To live the qualities of evenness, harmony, inner peace, expanded awareness, truth, purity, love, joy, it's just a natural expression of the inner and the outer. Clearer thinking and perception, better health and well-being, better reactions to stress in life. This is living the principles of our cultures and religions by using a tool that can change the physiology to reflect those qualities naturally and without strain. We all like that. Perform action from the level of refined thinking, where the mind is more refined and brain physiology is coherent. Develop a strong thought process, where the mind is clear and results are productive and effective. When the mind is muddled, results are muddled. And again, it's not a contrived thing. It's something you have to do. Sit around and think about it. It's something to do to allow the physiology to rebalance. Therefore, to actually live the values of our religions, to have that high quality behavior that we all want to see in our societies. We don't like to see people damaging and hurting other people. We need to experience the higher values of our own awareness. The basis of religious life is successful action, action that brings harmony to life every day. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men, is the result of a more pure consciousness and clearer thinking. It's all connected. Living in peace, inner peace, being peaceful and contributing to peace on earth with this kind of influence, that should be an everyday reality, an everyday experience. The scientists and the sages are all describing the same thing, that nature is orderly and the depth is powerful and peaceful. The quest of life is to find that unity. Why just talk about it? Not get so caught in the differences. Oh, you're this, you're that, that we tighten the boundaries and find fault. That results in the opposite values that are not good. I don't even want to mention them. In this holiday season, we're always reminded of peace on earth. Religions, cultures, and technologies of developing consciousness are all helpful towards that goal, the bigger goal of living life in peace. We find unity within ourselves, and we find unity among religions about unity. So let's look at one example, the Golden Rule, and see how each different religions define it. In Christianity, in Matthew, it says, "Do unto others what you would have them do unto you." In the Talmud, for the Jewish religion, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow man. This is the law. All the rest is commentary." In the Mahabharata of the Vedic tradition, "Do not unto others which would cause you pain if done to you." And the Udana Varga of Buddhism, "Hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful." And in Confucianism, "Do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you." That's the most direct one. And in the Quran, in Islam, "None of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself." So we find that there's the same rule for every religion. Behave. Be good. Be nice. Another universal principle is that material life is not all there is and is in fact not the primary aim of human life. Although there can be security, comfort, enjoyment, and happiness there, which there is, it's fun. But the real purpose of life is to seek a more satisfying spiritual life, whether we call it that or not. In one form or another, all the major religions express what Matthew says in the gospel, "But strive first for the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things would be given to you as well." From this state of life, in other words, all possibilities exist. So I think as we're kind of moving towards the end of the show, I want to share with you an experience from the Christian tradition of that deep, peaceful state of the mind that we've been talking about. But let's translate it into an actual experience that someone wrote down and explained. It was St. Augustine. He said, "Imagine if all the tumult of the body were to quiet down, along with all our busy thoughts. Imagine if the very world should stop and the mind go beyond itself and be quite still and attain a flash of that eternal wisdom that abides above all things. And imagine if that moment were to go on and on, leaving behind all other sights and sounds but his one vision that ravishes and absorbs and fixes the beholder in joy and leaves us breathless. Would this not be what is bidden in Scripture, 'Enter thou into the joy of the Lord'?" It's a profound yet simple principle. That tumult, active life, maybe we're not living the same kind of life that St. Augustine did. We're out there Christmas shopping, trying to find a parking spot at the mall. There's lots of tumult out there in those long lines. But amidst all of that, there is that peacefulness from within. Whatever's happening on the outside, there's the potential for the mind to experience that deep peace. The mind can retreat from the day-to-day active world for a few minutes every day to replenish itself on that deep level. Contained within the active is the less active, and the still, it's within everybody. The state of coherence and harmony, the state of unity and balance as described by saints, by sages of every culture and religion, it's an experience that everyone is capable of having. Systematic exposure to these coherent and harmonious levels of the mind allows for the integration of the experience in daily life. You're living it. You're not talking about it. You're not open for it. That's the reason for meditation. It's not for a good story or to expect something during the practice, but to unfold the values of this settled state and live them. The enlightened in every tradition have been extolling this experience since ancient times. Our level of consciousness can grow, giving us a greater view and value of life, affecting society. It's due to a scientific age that we can understand the need for and the practical results of meditation. A refined nervous system can be measured in this scientific age, so it's not made up. And this is one that is capable of spontaneously living the qualities of one's religion, doing right action, and not generating harm. Peace, love, goodwill to all. I want to wish you a very happy holiday. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. And any other celebration that you're enjoying. Celebrating Wednesday, that's also nice to do. Very best wishes and deep peace and happiness as we enter into a new year. And thank you for listening. This has been Kathy's Corner on WPKN 89.5 FM.
From angels bending near the earth to touch their harps of gold. Still through the cloven skies they come with peaceful wings unfurled, and sing the heavenly music flows o'er all the weary world. Peace on the earth, goodwill to men. From heaven's all gracious King, the world in solemn stillness led to hear the angels say.
And you just heard Kathy's Corner here on listener-supported WPKN 89.5 FM and streaming at WPKN.org. It's coming up on 1 p.m., and we're going to have a couple of announcements, and then we will be back with Nick Jacobs and Music Sacred and Profane right here on your favorite community radio station, WPKN.
The shortened enrollment period for health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act ends in 2 days in Connecticut on Friday, December 22nd. Contact numbers and web links are available at wpkn.org/health.
Hi, this is Steve DiCostanzo. I'm general manager of community radio station WPKN. As we near the end of 2017, we'd like to thank you, our listeners and financial supporters, for helping us to achieve a real milestone year. Not only were we named by Connecticut Magazine as the best radio station for music in the state, but we also established a WPKN Inc. endowment fund and just flipped the switch on our brand new transmitter. Many of you are now making charitable donations to favorite nonprofits, and we'd like you to keep nonprofit WPKN in mind. Now more than ever, independent media outlets like WPKN are protecting your freedoms of speech and expression. Please reply to our year-end appeal letter or go online 24 hours a day via our website to make your donation at WPKN.org. You might even wish to dig a bit deeper this year because of the new tax bill. From all of us at WPKN, have a wonderful holiday season and our very best in the coming year.
Hi, this is Mark the Mechanic from the Car Bob Show. While we always try to steer you in the right direction towards repairing your car, there is that time when you just need to say goodbye to your old friend. This is what's so special about WPKN. If we can't tell you how to fix your car, we can help you get rid of it. Donate your car to WPKN and receive a generous tax deduction. And you are helping WPKN with the funds needed to keep this great radio station going 24/7 with the best programming heard anywhere. It's very simple. Go to WPKN.org, click on the car key. All the instructions are there to help make the whole process as easy as possible. Once again, I want to thank you for your continuing support and being a part of your community radio station, WPKN 89.5 FM and WPKN.org.
The rice when the wind blows across the water. Hi, I'm Bill
Dusing. I'm Guy Beardsley.
And I'm Richard Hill. Join us the first and third Thursday of each month at noon for WPKN's Organic Farm Stand, bringing you news and views from the organic community.
Hear our small farm report.
The latest news on GMO labeling, pollinator protection, and organic growing techniques.
And interviews with exciting and informative authors, activists, and experts from the front lines of food system change.
Listen on the first.